from the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Here's Robert.
Welcome to School Talks. On the program this week, we continue our focus on the many apprenticeships available for students as they exit high school. We'll be joined by Prudence Rose from Musk Construction Careers, from the Bricklayers Local 2, Nate Nestor, from the Laborers International Union of North America, Director of Government Affairs Robert George, and from the Women in Skilled Trades, Shakree French. All this and much more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Prudence Rose from Must Construction Careers. For our School Talks listeners, Must is a very important sponsor of our program, and we appreciate their continued support. And Prudence, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Robert.
So in our continuing feature of all the different trades available in Must, I want to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about Must Construction Careers and how it sort of benefits the construction industry.
Well, thank you for having me. And first, I'd like to say that MUST is management and union serving together. That's what the MUST is for. And what MUST does is we started out as a safety program about 10, 11 years ago, and we did all the drug testing. We still do all the safety. We do all the things we did 10 years ago, but we have added construction careers. I came on board about 10 years ago and started going to all the different schools and all the different organizations in Detroit, Wayne, Oakland, Macomb County. And I started talking about a career in the construction industry through an apprenticeship. I represent all 22 of the union apprenticeship trades. And what we do is each trade is different. And what I do is I go around and I talk about each trade and answer any questions people have and try and help them get into a union construction trade.
And, you know, one thing I appreciate about your organization is many people have an understanding of what many of the skilled trades are, like your more common ones, like electricians and plumbers and bricklayers and such. But there are 22 different trades that make up the construction industry. And I know anywhere you go, whether you walk into a building like Little Caesars Arena, all 22 of those trades most likely have touched a project like that. Might not be as readily available or viewable, I should say, but it is an extraordinary collection of trades that make up this industry. So from a standards perspective, how does MUST support high standards in construction projects?
Well, first of all, any construction site that you go on to, the motto is safety first. So MUST is the arm of safety that works to keep the project safe so that everyone can go out there and do their job in a safe environment and go home at night to their family with no injuries. And hey, keeping the job site safe is the number one priority. What MUST does now with the construction side of it is we try and integrate our young people in the high schools to understand what a union construction trade is all about and how they can get into it as an apprentice. And like you said, there's 22 different trades. I represent all of them, and some of them are intertwined into other trades. Like if you were a carpenter, that's also part of the millwright. So, I mean, there's 22 individual trades, but some of them are combined into others. But I think that we are the support team for all 22 of those trades.
And a quick question, is it fair to assume that all 22 trades have apprenticeship opportunities?
That's correct. And each apprenticeship opportunity is an entity unto itself. So if you want to get into the bricklayers, they have their own apprenticeship. If you want to be an electrician, they have their own apprenticeship. And the difference in these apprenticeships is none of these are federally funded. These are all funded by the individual apprenticeship. So I call it the Pay It Forward program, where if you get in, then you're paying a few cents out of your check to get the next person in, because these are earn as you learn, no debt. So when you get into one of these apprenticeships, you're not paying any college debt for this. You're getting in there free. And when you graduate and you get your journeyman license, you're 30 credits shy of an associate's degree, and some of the trades will help you get that associate's degree. And the other thing is you're making anywhere from $60,000 to $200,000 a year. And yes, there is a trade out there that makes $200,000 a year.
I do know. I know many of journeyman electricians and that it's really, at this point in our area, it's really, in many cases, you can make as much money as how hard you want to work. And so we're currently with Prudence Rose, the representative here from Musk Construction Careers. I want to follow up on something you said with regard to apprenticeship. How does Musk interact or participate in helping students become apprentices across all these different unions?
Well, what I do is I give them the information they need. You know, they have to be 18 years of age or older. They have to have a high school diploma or a GED. They have to have a car and a driver's license. They have to be 100% drug-free. And on 80% of these trades, they have to have 1 year of algebra on their transcripts from high school. And believe me, in Michigan, everyone will have 1 year of algebra on their transcripts because it is a requirement in the state of Michigan. So what I do is go out there and I try and explain to them how important it is that if you don't want to go to college, that a career, and notice I said career, a career in the construction industry is a viable option. And I'm very pleased that with all of the different trades that I work with, and some you're going to hear today, they are very, very good at coming to all the different career fairs that I put on. And every time there's something going on, I send all of them an announcement and I get a lot of them to come. So part of how I facilitate is to get these different unions to go to these career fairs and go to these different opportunities, and they're very good about it.
And you know, one thing I've learned in getting to know Must and the different trades is, as I said before, there are a lot of trades that many people might not be readily aware of, and by continuing your roadshow, so to speak, you're putting in front of students a lot of different opportunities that equate to a career. One last question. How would you characterize the benefits of being a unionized construction worker versus someone in a non-union? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do have thoughts on that. And because I was with a contractor for 30 years, and we were a union electrical contractor, and I was their director of operations, I really focused on unions, never non-unions. Now, I realized in today's environment and how we are, a lot of non-union contractors, they have a great pay scale. And they're probably in parity with what union contractors do. But what they don't have is they don't have the long-term benefits that a union electrician or a union bricklayer or any of the union trades, you're getting a retirement package that's about 80% of your career. So a lot of times these gentlemen, when they're ready to retire, or women, when you're ready to retire, you're going to get 80% of your pay plus any annuities you might have, plus you're going to get Social Security if you're in that range. I've had guys that retired making more money retired than they did working. You are not going to get that in a non-union contractor.
Mm-hmm. Prudence Rose from Musk Construction Careers, thanks for stopping by and really giving us a good overview of how Musk supports these construction careers. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to actually some of the trades that are out working in the industry. This is 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Robert George, the Director of Government Affairs for the Laborers International Union of North America, also known as LIUNA. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Thank you for having me, Robert. Excited to be here.
So I appreciate your time, and in our continued focus on the number of skilled trades available in Michigan through our all the various trades and our coordinated effort with Musk Construction Careers, give our School Talks listeners a good sense of what LIUNA is and what some of your founding principles are as it relates to the construction industry.
Certainly. As you mentioned, Robert, at the top, LIUNA stands for the Laborers International Union of North America. We represent over 500,000 active members across the United States and Canada. In Michigan here, we've got 15,000 active and retired members. We represent folks that do a wide variety of things, from demolition to new construction to environmental remediation. And these folks do almost anything that you can imagine on a job site. And it's a part of our pride that we are one of the most diverse building trades unions in the type of work that we perform, but also who our membership is. We are very excited to recruit from all walks of life in all parts of Michigan to build as strong of a union as we can.
So you mentioned touching all walks of life. Tell me a little bit about your efforts in having diversity be reflected in your membership.
Certainly. So we are, the construction industry historically has been a very heavily male-dominated field, but we're excited to say that we are above average for the trade participation for women. We are about 12% or so, and we are also very excited that we are able to say that we participate in so many different outreach programs, from women in skilled trades to Access for All to recruitment programs in high schools across our state, making sure that everyone has the opportunity to earn a full career in the skilled trades.
You know, you said something earlier that made me think of this. When you think of all the trades available in the construction industry, and I'll just use this as an example. An electrician does electrical work. Mm-hmm. And the way you frame the concept of a laborer, where they do lots of different things, how does the work they do not step on or overlap the other work that's done by the other trades?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's something that's been a decades in the making solution. The trades, we all are a very competitive bunch. And, you know, we've learned to work together through different collective bargaining agreements and different jurisdictional assessments of different types of work and so forth. But the laborers support the job site. We are often the first folks on the job site to get the site ready, to clear any items, to prepare the work for the other trades. And we're often the last trade on the job site to make sure that the job site is properly closed up and cleaned up and to make sure that it's safe for the public to use. And so knowing that we are going to be the supporting folks oftentimes, when we've got new construction sites for an electrician or a carpenter or a mason tender and so forth, that we work really hand in glove with these folks. And other job sites, when it comes to demolition or when it comes to a lot of the critical energy or infrastructure work, when it comes to bridges and dams and heavy highways, really we are the lead trade on that site. Our folks do a lot of concrete work, and there's a lot of concrete in Michigan. So,
you know, in my time as superintendent, one of the most important concerns we had is when our schools are under renovation during the summer, you have a very short window to do a lot of work. I remember how important it was that we secured the school every night at the end of the shift so that, you know, kids from the neighborhood didn't get in the school and that. And the way you framed the whole readiness of the job site makes perfect sense to me. So we're currently with Robert George, the Director of Government Affairs with the Laborers International Union of North America, talking about the kinds of work they do in the industry. And Robert, let me ask, tell us a little bit about the apprenticeship programs that are available to your incoming members and how that works.
Certainly. So our apprenticeship programs are something that is a huge point of pride for our union. There are no costs to attend our apprenticeship programs for any of our types of class offerings. Once you become a laborer and you sign up with your local union, you can attend any of our apprenticeship programs. We have four across the state with our flagship location in Perry, Michigan, just outside of Lansing. And these facilities are state-of-the-art. They are certified by the Department of Labor. And the great thing about attending one of our programs is that you receive a stipend, so you get paid to learn. And in contrast to our non-union competitors that charge tuition, and there is no sort of stipend for these folks that attend those programs, you get to graduate debt-free. And now there is a big options and different ways that you can go about attending one of our programs, depending if you want to specialize in general construction, if you are looking to go into some more of the pipe trades, if you're looking to do more environmental remediation. There's a broad swath of different offerings once you clear the general requirements for entry-level construction work.
So once you're in and you're you've gotten through the basics and so on, are there any particular credentials that an apprentice would learn that provides them value when they go to work full-time?
Yeah, one of the interesting things about our union is the ability to train folks for very unique situations. And when you're talking about really supporting Michigan and supporting the United States, when the chips are down and folks are needed, they call on the Laborers International Union of North America. And one of the things within your question that we do is we offer hazardous waste training and a lot of different trainings insofar as lead, asbestos, all of these types of very heavy metals that can be quite hazardous to work with. And so when there's a natural disaster, that the laborers step up and step into that role to make sure that the community can recover. For instance, in California, with the most recent wildfires, we have several hundred laborers out in the field right now cleaning up those areas impacted by the wildfires. And if you go back through the last few decades, when there's been a major natural disaster, both the cleanup as well as the rebuild, the laborers have been leading on.
You know, you mentioned the California fires. One thing I've learned through watching that horrific tragedy is, given how devastatingly hot the fire was, just how much hazardous material is there from, whether it's plastic in people's homes that burned, or it really puts really an important light on your group as far as being the tip of the spear that sort of manages a cleanup effort like that.
And I'd also just add there, Robert, we have the certifications and the training for our members, but we also have the capacity to be able to put out the needed manpower to be able to do the job. And that's something that really does set us apart when there is an emergency, and it sets us apart from our non-union competitors.
Yeah, and I imagine your ability to mobilize is that much quicker as well. So let me ask just a parallel question. Is there ever a time when there's a shortage of another trade where you are allowed by rule, bargaining, laws, what have you, to do that kind of work in the absence of someone, say an electrician or some of the other trades? Is there any overlap there?
There is. You know, it's a complicated question. It depends on the type of certifications required, whether it's a public or a private job and so forth. But for a good example of that is in the expansion of renewable energy. You know, we are seeing a very rapid build out in Michigan, given the state's new climate and jobs laws that came into effect last year and the year before that. And so what we're seeing on that front is that the utility companies are looking to build very quickly. And so when we're talking about some of these solar and wind projects, different trades have different densities across the state, and we have a good understandings and good relationships with some of the other trades that are on these projects, that sometimes that they are going to struggle to fill some of the positions just based off of the area of the state and what other jobs they have, and that we can step in and fill those roles, and vice versa, depending on our capabilities and manpower in certain parts of the state as well.
Fantastic. Robert George, the Director of Government Affairs for the Laborers International Union of North America, also known as LIUNA. I want to thank you for joining us on School Talks and helping our listeners understand one more great opportunity for people to pursue a valuable and important career. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
After a word from our sponsors, we'll chat with Nate Nestor from the Bricklayers Local 2. This is 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
We're back here on School Talks, continuing our focus on the construction trades in today's program. And joining me is Nate Nestor from the Bricklayers Local 2. Welcome to the program, Nate.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So, you know, one thing about bricklaying, when I think about the history of America, it doesn't take much to appreciate in a city like Detroit or New York City, just how much brick there is and how long it's been a part of our culture and construction and so on. And through your work in the local, can you give us a sense of how your history is connected to the broader International Union of Bricklayers And really, what are your current priorities and values as it goes to your group?
Yeah, the BAC, which is the Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers, have played a major role in shaping its current priorities and values. Here's how that historical context informs what Local 2 stands for today. The legacy of craftsmanship and pride, like BAC, all BAC locals inherit a deep tradition of skilled craftsmanship that goes back to the 19th century. We uphold high standards of work quality, hands-on training through apprenticeships, and a sense of pride within our trade. We also hold a commitment to worker solidarity and rights. Historically, BAC locals were instrumental in organizing labor actions that won fair wages, safer work conditions, and job security. Our local values are a strong advocacy for union labor, protection of workers' rights on job sites, and support for all collective bargaining. We also uphold diversity and inclusion. Over time, BAC has worked to expand its opportunities within the trades to underrepresented groups. Local 2 is engaged in similar initiatives, continuing a history of pushing the boundaries of who gets to build the future.
And you know, the very building we're sitting in, the Fisher Building, and you pick the building in the city or even in New York City, there you probably are familiar. It's a black and white photograph. It's probably 100 years old that shows four or five men sitting out on a beam, you know, however high up in the air, eating their lunch. And it really sheds light on the point you made about the work you do to provide worker safety, because, you know, bricklaying is obviously vertical construction, and the challenges that come with that are certainly enormous when it comes to safety. So let me ask you, over the years, how has your group weathered the economic ups and downs in terms of construction work and availability? What are some of the things that you have as a group been able to do to help weather that storm?
So we've definitely had a lot of adaptation and growth through change. Over the decades, the BAC has weathered its economic downturns, changes in construction technology, and definite shifts in labor laws. Local 2 has learned to adapt by investing in ongoing education and certifications, engaging politically to support pro-labor legislation, and expanding into related trades like tile, stone, terrazzo, and restoration.
So let me ask you, what is an example of a certification available for a bricklayer?
So for a bricklayer, we would also have like flashing, grout certification that we offer through a training center. If we wanted to go on the restoration portion side, we have yawn restoration, which is stone patching for a lot of these older buildings, such as the Fisher Building, where stone is most likely what it's constructed of.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the Michigan Central Station, was your group involved with the restoration of the train station?
Yes, it was.
So, because I visited it after it was renovated, and it's funny you mentioned that, because there was a lot of patchwork done to the building, given how much it had fallen in disarray. One other question on certifications. Is it a opportunity when someone comes into the program through an apprenticeship, are they given an opportunity at some point to specialize in anything?
So that is one thing. We encompass a variety of trades. We're not just bricklayers. That's what portion of Allied Craft Workers is.
I see.
We have tile, marble, terrazzo, stone, restoration workers, cement masons. So we encompass not just a production bricklayer, but all of that. And on the training side of it, as they come into our union, they are now given the opportunity to train for free in any certification that they want to get to continue their education.
So you start off somewhat basic and you drill down into where your interest is with regard to the craft workers and such.
Yes.
Yeah, fair enough. So your local, too, is based here in the Detroit area. And how big of a region does that cover here in Michigan?
So we actually have a statewide local now where we encompass Metro Detroit as one local, and then we also have the outstate. So we reach almost as far as, let's see, we do a lot of the east side, all the east side. And then once we get over into the Lansing area, Brighton, that's when we start to get into outstate.
I see. On the apprenticeship front, let me ask you, we're currently with Nate Nestor from the Bricklayers Local 2, talking about the work they do. From an apprenticeship perspective, what are the qualifications and prerequisites someone would need to be considered for an apprenticeship in your program?
So what we look for is our application is fully online now. If you visit bricklayers.org and then go into apprenticeship and training, you can come right to our application. And throughout that application, you'll fill out the common fields. And then all we require is a driver's license, a birth certificate, a copy of your high school transcript or diploma, your work key scores, and a copy of your current resume.
And the work key scores, I think that is connected to some of the support that MUST Construction Careers provides opportunities for people to make sure they have that. Because I know many, many high schools through their career tech programs give students the opportunity to take the work keys assessment as a function of these apprenticeships. So once you're in the apprenticeship, give our School Talks listeners a sense of how much time is an apprentice in a classroom versus actually out, you know, doing work and such.
So the way that our program works is once you've been selected through the interview process, you'll come into our training center for 12 weeks. Through those 12 weeks, we're going to teach you the basics of the trade that of your choosing. So we're just getting you prepared for the field. Once those 12 weeks are completed, then you go directly into the field where you will do 77 hours of continuing education per every 6 months. And so that would either include online courses. The OSHA 30 is another one that we would have the students do or the apprentices do. And then they're all just doing related training. So that's on-the-job training as well.
And then the on-the-job training, is that where you're using existing Journey folks to mentor them in the field?
Yes.
And that's, do you have Journey folks working in the classroom setting as well?
For the most part, a lot of we have brought in journeymen back to teach in the past. We do offer a Mentorship Matters course, which a lot of our apprentices take advantage of, where we go over a lot of the things and the day-to-day rigors that they're going to experience and how to be good in the way that they're learning, learn how to take constructive criticism and learn and build from it.
And, you know, just as important as it is to learn the trade, whichever it is, I think there's an equal focus on teaching them how to be safe. And I'm just curious, in your experience, how do you approach apprentices to help them understand the need to be safe and that? And I imagine at some point, following all the rules from OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, what are some of the things that you do to help them realize the safety aspect?
So that's really what sets us apart from, say, the non-union sector. We make it mandatory that all students, before they leave our program, are OSHA certified in the OSHA 30. We also offer things like signaling, rigging courses, hydromobile training, which is definitely the scaffold that we work on most of the time, so then they are able to operate a hydromobile in the process. A big portion of it is definitely safety, and we hammer that home to all of our apprentices.
Fantastic. Nate Nestor from the Bricklayers Local 2, I want to thank you for joining us, giving us a good look at the apprenticeship opportunities and what it means to work in your industry. I appreciate your time and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
After the break, we'll chat with Shakri French from the Women in Skilled Trades. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by MUST Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program, we welcome Shakri French from the Women in Skilled Trades Program, also known as WIST. And welcome to the program, Shakri.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate your time. You know, in our continued focus on skilled trades and the number of opportunities available for students through apprenticeships and different opportunities, I was intrigued by the work you do with a focus on women in skilled trades. And I'm hoping you could share with our School Talks listeners, what is WIST and what role does it serve in the construction industry?
Yes. So thank you so much for having me. Shakri French here, Program Supervisor for Michigan Workforce Development Institute, and I oversee the Southern Eastern side for WIST, Women in Skilled Trades. And what we actually have is an amazing program that's an apprenticeship readiness program to get individuals introduced to the skilled trade industry. And how do we do that? You know, we have a whole team across the state that is recruiting. And we find out that individuals that need to go in this direction, we need to be in communities that are underserved, underpopulated, and that need accessibilities. So we're able to have this amazing apprenticeship program, 16 weeks called WIST, and now we are servicing the Detroit area, the Lansing area, the Flint area, and we just launched over in Grand Rapids.
So you're sort of like a farm system before they go into some apprenticeship. And do you have a sense of where most of your members or participants end up with respect to the kinds of trades?
Yes. So, yes. Actually, that is, it's an introduction to the skilled trades, and that's why it's an apprenticeship readiness, to get you ready, because individuals, it's a blank canvas for a lot of them, and they don't know what it is that skilled trades are. There's over 22 different trades that are out there. And so what we do in our 16-week, we have classes Tuesdays and Thursdays in the evening. We understand there's single mothers out there, and as you know, women are the leading individuals that are the caregivers. Right? So we make sure that we are accessible in the time frame. And then also, they are building in the actual labor history. We want to understand what is union, right? And then what we also do is we make sure they have these certifications. But how are they having these certifications? We're having qualified instructors. We have three founders that created WIST in 2016, Tori, Carol, and Lisa. All three of these individuals are project managers. They've had fields and have a lot of experience. So what they did is they collected individuals that are out in this field and said, how can we create a curriculum specifically for women? So how do we do that? Is we specialize in them. We do physical training. We do CPR. We do first aid. But also what we do is we make sure that our classroom is very small. We don't go over about 12 students in our cohort because we want to build that morale and that foundation, because as these women graduate, it is a long-term relationship that they have. Mm-hmm. You know, we have over 100 alumni right now. And like you asked, what are they interested in? They come in and they may be interested in electrician, but when they go into the IBW 58 training facility, they know what it all takes. And they're like, you know what? It's a lot of math. I may not be, you know, specialized in this. And then we go over to the plumbers and pipe fitters. We go to about 5 or 6 different field trips to get them exposed. But right now, the leading trade is the operators and engineers and IBW and the carpenters and millwrights.
So those are the most popular,
yes,
that come out of it, yes. So we're currently with Shakri French from the Women in Skilled Trades organization. And one thing you mentioned about sort of the farm system, or they're sort of like in an on-deck circle getting ready to take a step into the apprenticeship. One thing I wanted to clarify is you're providing them particular certifications before they even become an apprentice. And I would imagine that probably helps their competitiveness in landing an apprenticeship if they're competing against someone who doesn't yet have those certifications. Is that fair?
Correct.
Does any of the certifications involve occupational safety, OSHA stuff?
Yes, so you're right on. It is an apprenticeship readiness program to get them ready to be an apprentice. And we're doing this because we are creating the strongest candidate when they are applying. You know, it's very competitive in whichever trade that you're going into. So if these individuals are already going to obtain their OSHA 30, they're going to obtain their CPR first aid training, they're going to their North America Building Trade Certification, their MC3, they're going to have blueprint reading, they're going to have resume rebuilding class, they're going to have financial literacy, they're going to be exposed to this in the 16 weeks. So therefore, they are going to be more hireable in the apprenticeship field, and the fact that we have already connected these individuals at the training facilities to expose them to the actual hiring directors right then and there when they are. Our women in skilled trades, majority of the trades like operators and engineers, we have direct entry. We've built a strong relationship because we're going to these field trips on a consistent basis, and we are actually, you know, connecting these individuals when the hiring process happens. And what is the evaluation, right? We already have individuals complete their work keys, which is an aptitude test that is required. They're already doing that prior to even enrolling in our program. They already do their drug tests and their physical, and it's through MUST. So they're already in the system preparing them to be the best and the strongest candidate as an apprentice.
And they're several steps ahead of others who might be trying it on their own.
Absolutely.
That is fantastic. You know, something I read I have to ask you about that I found really interesting. You mentioned when a group comes together, a cohort of students in the program, they're often around mentors and people. Tell me a little bit about Marion Baker and Emily Budnick.
Yes, yes. Our alumni and... what we do is that we understand that we have over 100 graduates. Lansing's cohort is 12th cohort right now. We have Detroit cohort 4. We have Flint cohort 3. So we do that first day when individuals, like I stated to you, that it's a blank canvas. They're unknown about what they're getting into. So that first day of class, what we do is we have an interview panel from our alumni. So they come in. And they actually, it's a tried and testimony journey. And they explain about the 16-week process. And what they also is, they explain thoroughly about some of the barriers that they face. And the most important part is now they have an individual when they graduate to lean on. Emily right now is iron worker, for sure apprentice. She's actually working in Ohio. And she... is such an impeccable human being to a point where her journey worker that she works alongside is taking her to Indiana at a battery plant next month. So she's constantly, you know, working. And she is actually our apprentice of the year that we are for our workers gala that we'll be hosting May 9th. So we make sure. And what we do too for all of our alumni, we have some supportive services and we have volunteering fundings too. So when they come in, you know, support our cohorts, we assist them. What barriers are you facing? You know, we give them gas allowance. We help them up with tools. We help them with some car repairs. So we make sure in the process of them enrolling that we eliminate those barriers. But individuals that are alumni, like Emily, and they come in and they have hands-on experience to explain to the women and to let them know that we're here to change the narrative and the image of the skilled trade industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, one thing that just really impresses me about your group is you were founded in 2016.
Yes.
And so you're 9 years old, maybe approaching your 10th anniversary. And many of the other trades that we interview on this program, many of them are 100 years old. And when I think about what you've been able to achieve in that short time and the prospect for it going forward is really impressive. So, Shakri French from the Women in Skilled Trades, I want to thank you for stopping by School Talks and giving us a really important perspective on opportunities for women in the trades. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to thank all of our guests today for providing a really important perspective on the number of opportunities available for students through the many apprenticeships in the skilled trades. And what we discussed today really and truly focuses on what matters, and that is a skill set that can help you get a job. I'd like to thank Prudence Rose from Musk Construction Careers, Nate Nestor from the Bricklayers Local 2, Robert George from the Laborers International Union of North America, and Shakri French from the Women in Skilled Trades. That's all the time we have for today, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.